Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are reviewing the new movie Till, about the murder of Emmett Till and his mother, who vows to bring justice to his murder. This is not an easy movie to talk about by any means. It was not, this is something that happened in real life. Obviously not an easy real life situation either. So I just wanted to warn you before we start that there will trigger warning for racial epithets, violence, and racism, of course, involved in this movie as well. So all those topics will come up throughout the episode, especially when we get into the review. So we also want to mention we're recording this on a Saturday morning. We're both kind of groggy, I don't know is the right word, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I just sound congested. I feel like I sound congested, okay. But I might not. It's also hard when we have headphones in.
Yes.
You know, it's weird to hear yep. what your voice is sounding so, like on the outside.
Yeah. Just, you know, comment on social media. Let us know if you thought we sounded groggy or congested or if you thought we sounded great. So, you know, just...
Jared, while you brought that up, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Because we talk about pop culture and stuff. Are you planning on getting off Twitter with this Elon Musk takeover?
I don't know. I'm not sure yet. I haven't weighed all my options. I'm also verified on Twitter because
I know.
I'm a media personality. But I don't know if I really don't feel like I would want to pay the $8 a month to keep the blue check mark. I don't feel like it's that important.
I don't
want to
give him my money. Well, I'm not verified. I'm talking like I'm verified. Yeah. I'm most definitely not.
But I don't think, I mean, I think maybe I might stay on Twitter, but I cannot see myself paying for the blue check mark.
Yeah.
I mean, especially at $8 a month. That's almost $100 a year to pay for that old check mark, and I don't really care about it that much. So
yeah. I don't utilize Twitter. I never got very good at it, and it kind of became like a hateful place. So I don't utilize it, but I've kept it open. But I'm not verified, so I don't really care. But yeah, you just reminded me of that, and that reminded me of other things too.
I think you should maybe amend the blue check mark thing. I think anybody that is involved in like a government position should automatically get their blue check mark, like senators, the president, mayors, governors, etc. I feel like they should not have to pay for their blue check mark at all. Media personalities, I'm kind of iffy on, but I don't know. Maybe you look at the followers and say people with over this many followers that are verified get to stay verified for free. I'm not sure. But like if Joe Biden has to pay $8 a month to keep the blue check mark, like what are we doing?
I would almost be the opposite. And I would say anyone who's like not making money hand over fist should pay.
Yeah.
Whereas like people who have earned it from, I don't know. I hate Elon, so I'm over it. But you did remind me of two other things that I wanted to mention. I know we're right at the top of the episode, but my friend Lauren, she is a faithful listener of the podcast, and we've been friends since middle school. She's one of my favorite people. She came to visit us in Dayton this last week, and she was like, please show me where you record the podcast. And so I showed her, and she was like, this is not what I envisioned. I was like, yeah, I'm in a closet. And then her husband was with her, and he was like, why don't you have a chair or anything? And I was like, I don't know. I just feel like standing in this closet.
Never added a chair, so yeah.
Never added a chair. But this is also, if people saw this too, which Jared's seen it, but it's a weird space. Like it would be hard to find a chair that actually meets where I need it to sit, where I would sit and be eye level with the computer and all that.
And the
so
door,
I just stand the whole time.
Like your closet door, like where you would put the chair would be right in front of the door. So like if you left the chair in there, you wouldn't be able to get to anything in the closet. So
but that was funny. So I wanted to tell you that. And then also my friend Mandy, who we have had on the podcast a couple episodes ago when we talked about Midnight in Paris, she texted me yesterday. She was listening to our episode, the fall movie preview, and she said I was the one who was laughing hysterically in the car when you talked about your brother and Daniel Radcliffe. So if you all haven't listened to our fall movie preview, it's worth it just to get to the last 7 or so minutes, because I definitely talked about my twin brother looking like Daniel Radcliffe, but first I had said Daniel Radcliffe was hot, so then it became this whole big blunder. I debated asking Jared to edit it out, but we kept it in. But just to clarify again, I don't think my brother's hot. He's my twin. I love him. He's great. But I think Daniel Radcliffe is his own person. So there you go. But if you need a good laugh. If you need a good laugh, the last 7 minutes of that episode.
On to news now. Not a ton of news. It was announced earlier this week that James Gunn will be taking over DC Films, kind of like the same role that Kevin Feige has with Marvel, where he's in charge of creative content, kind of the storyline going forward for DC. You know, I think this is probably a good move for DC. They've always been kind of second fiddle to Marvel, especially recently. So having him kind of take over that role seems like a step in the right direction. We'll see how it goes. Obviously, it'll be a while before any of the things he does really have a huge impact, because they already have movies in production and stuff like right now. And then the other thing was, there was a little bit of drama this week with Keanu Reeves and Matthew Perry. Matthew Perry also has a new book out, which Katie will talk about in recommendations. But this Keanu thing kind of popped up this week too.
Yes. Okay. So this whole thing with this Matthew Perry book, I cannot believe the exposure it's getting. I know part of that's his notoriety, but I am glad it is, because the whole book, the entire book, is about addiction and surviving addiction. So it's a very informative book, helpful book, I think, for anyone who loves someone who's struggling with addiction or is battling addiction currently. But before I got it, I pre-ordered it from Target. I actually got it, I think, 3 days before it came out officially. Okay. So I had finished the book the day it came out and was like fully released. I finished the book that day because I couldn't wait to read it. But someone had told me about this comment about Keanu Reeves, and I was like, what? I don't even know what you're talking about. Well, I finally read it because I read it in the book. And you do need the context. I didn't like it. It actually left a very bad taste in my mouth. But you did need the context to understand why he was talking about Keanu. All he was talking about was River Phoenix was his friend. River Phoenix, of course, the late brother of Joaquin Phoenix, died of a drug overdose when he was very, very young. I think he was like 23. But anyway, they were friends and they had just made a movie together. And he was saying, I think River was a little older than him, and he was just kind of like enamored of River. Like, he just thought he was a great actor. He was beautiful, very talented. It'd be like if you worked alongside like Meryl Streep or Christian Bale or Anthony Hopkins or someone when you're young, and then you see like the potential that they possess, mm-hmm. I guess. So he brought up that, why do people like River Phoenix die of drug addiction or alcoholism and stuff like that, but we have Keanu Reeves still walking around? And I was like, what? And I thought that was weird for so many reasons, but mainly, why Keanu Reeves?
Kind of like right Keanu out of Reeves, left field, like no.
But also, random. That's so funny you say that, Jared, because I looked up Keanu's reaction, because Keanu's made a comment on it, and he just said that it came out of, he said it kind of came out of left field, but he said, but ultimately it kind of backfired on Matthew Perry, which is why he had to apologize. And Keanu's right. And Matthew Perry said he pulled that name out of thin air. Like, he just pulled that name out of there. And I was like, that's a bizarre name to pull out of the air. Like, if you said something like, I won't say it, but a political figure that most people hate, if you'd said, why is that person allowed to live? I'd be like, yeah, I'm on board. Why are they still alive? But to mention, that'd be like saying, why is Betty White if she was still alive? Like, why did you pick on the nicest? Also, someone who hasn't had drama, who's known for being kind and down to earth.
Kind of
why
in like
would
a,
you pick that person?
A renaissance acting-wise with the John Wick movies, like, has come back to prominence over the last couple of years for sure. So, and the new
and
the Matrix
movie. It
was
just very strange.
Yeah, so.
So that, I did not like that part about the book, but I do think the context around it helps. So if you actually read it and you read that chapter, it's just kind of a throwaway comment. But he is talking about, like, he's trying to say addiction is a horrible disease and we lose too many people because of it. It's like a preventable death. So anyway, then the other thing about the book, this was going to come up in my recommendations because I was going to recommend this. The only other thing I didn't like about it, he brings up the fact that he's rich a lot. And we know he's rich. We know. I mean, that's not. Part of me is like, yeah, that's fact. Like, that's just the way you live.
You're on one of the most successful TV shows of all time. We understand.
And he brings up the $1 million per episode thing, which, if you're a true Friends fan, you know that. Like, the last two seasons, they were getting $1 million per episode. That doesn't include residuals and everything else for the rest of their lives. So we all know they're rich. It's still, again, still my favorite show. I love it. Chandler was my favorite character. But it got very annoying to hear that over and over and over. I'm rich. I could do this because I'm rich. I make $1 million an episode. That got annoying to me. I do think, though, the reason he did that, because he even kind of talks about this, he says a lot of times, almost the same amount of times, he was able to get the care he needed, go to rehab 15 times, get all of these surgeries and live because of his notoriety and because he financially could afford it. So I think he's trying to set it up for, I survived because of this. But at the same time, I'm like, you could have mentioned it two times at the beginning of the book, and I would have remembered that you're rich and you made $1 million per episode.
It sounds like
so that got annoying.
It sounds like what this book could have used was maybe a little bit of a better editor after Matthew Perry had written what he wanted to say.
Yeah.
Because it seems like that some of that could have been cut out and still gotten the point across. So.
But the book, I will say, the book was great. I mean, I don't think I've read many memoirs this year, so I don't know that this is saying much, but it was really great. And I personally know people who have struggled with addiction or are struggling with it. So that was very touching. It was great to read from a perspective of someone who's lived through, gone to hell and back, and is okay. And so I would encourage anyone to read it, especially if you're a Friends fanatic like I am and you love Chandler. This is a great, there's no reason not to read this book. Those were the only two things I didn't like about it. And then the last thing it cleared up for me, when the Friends reunion happened, I was concerned about him because I knew he'd already struggled with addiction and didn't know if it was active or not, but he was slurring his words on the reunion. And I remember people talking about it. Well, I found out in the book and during all his interviews, I watched so many interviews this week with him. He had to get emergency dental surgery the day before the reunion.
Okay.
And a lot of his teeth, he had bitten into a sandwich and teeth had fallen out because they're so damaged from all of the abuse, like drug addiction and stuff. So he had to get like veneers put in. He had to get like, he said he had his whole, like all his teeth replaced. I don't know if that's an exaggeration or not, but he had that done the day before the reunion, but he didn't want to cancel the reunion. So that does at least explain what happened there. If that helps anybody else, if you didn't want to read the book, at least, you know, that kind of, that helped me.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. And on the cover of the book, he's smiling with his mouth closed. So makes sense.
He talks about that in the book too. He was always very self-conscious about his teeth.
Okay.
But now he has new teeth.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're kind of moving right into recommendations. We didn't have any corrections this week. I don't have much this week. I haven't really watched much this week. Love is Blind, but we talked about that on the last episode. So, you know, worked a couple episodes in through that. Very interesting show, obviously on Netflix. If you don't know the premise, people are in these pods. They can't see each other. They're trying to match based on personality traits, characteristics, without any physical attractiveness factoring into it. Now, what we said on the last episode, all the people they picked to be on this show are like very physically attractive anyway. So it's not like you're going to get, you know, once you find out who your person is, it's not like they're going to walk out and they're going to be somebody that is like not already insanely attractive. So I wish they would maybe do something different with the casting there, like I mentioned last week, where they would maybe get a more variety of people to be on the show that aren't like all eights, nines, and tens, but that's what they've chosen for this show. So Love is Blind, though, is on Netflix. And yeah, I've been watching a couple episodes of that. So
me too. I caught up on the newest episodes. It's just getting crazier and crazier. And then the other show I watched on Netflix, I watched Never Have I Ever season 3. That's the show that Mindy Kaling has created. It's so good. It's about high schoolers and an Indian family living in America. It's so good. And they're only half hour episodes too. And there were like 9 of them. So you could, I mean, I got it done in like a day.
But can cruise
a part
through.
Of, keep in mind, well, I'll have it on either if I'm like walking or if I like on a treadmill or if I'm doing laundry, things like that. So but I'm still paying attention. That was great. And then the other thing, I did not realize this. I'm obsessed with Law and Order SVU. And then I've also loved the spinoff Organized Crime with Christopher Maloney. So they used to come to my Hulu app and I would just catch up on all the episodes there. And I was wondering, why is the season not back? Because I've seen them on Instagram and stuff filming. And I found out it's on Peacock, so I've had to continue to keep Peacock because now they're not releasing them on Hulu. So I don't know if they're waiting until the season's done to put them on Hulu, but that sucks. So now I have to watch them on Peacock. So I was caught up on Real Housewives. I'd finished my binge. You know, I was like, okay, good. We got that done. Check, check, check. But now I'm having to catch up on SVU and Organized Crime. But they've been great. But if anybody is like me and you didn't know where that went or if the show was back, you can watch it now on Peacock. And this season started with a 3-episode arc that involved 1 episode was on Organized Crime, 1 episode was on SVU, and 1 was on the regular Law and Order, which also took me a while to figure out. Because I kept watching these episodes in Organized Crime, and I was like, what happened to the killer in the last episode? And then I realized...
You had to go watch an episode of Law and Order.
But they should have. I feel like they should have. Yeah. I would never have known to do that.
They
but
do
I
that.
I finished the episodes. It's okay.
Okay. They do that with those Chicago shows sometimes, too. I'll see commercials where they're like,
Chicago Fire,
Chicago PD. It'll be like a storyline that goes across all 3. So... Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's a, that's our recommendations. And just so you know, you have to watch Law and Order on Peacock. Hulu is probably going to get the cancellation from me soon if they keep losing these. I mean, there's not much on there now, I feel like. They have the Kardashians.
You might be right.
And they have shows from ABC and shows from Fox, but I don't. CBS's stuff is on Paramount Plus. So Hulu used to be the place where you'd go for all the broadcast, like ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox. It would all be on there. And now, as these networks have started their own streaming services, they've moved stuff. So Hulu may not be, and Hulu is now owned by Disney. So I don't know how relevant it's going to be going forward, because I don't know if they intend to just lump all that stuff into Disney Plus, or if they're going to try to keep both services. So. Probably both, because then you have to pay more money. That would make sense. Okay, well, now we will talk about Till, released on October 28th of 2022. This movie did have a limited release before that, but that is the date that it went wide. It was on October 28th. Rated PG-13 for some thematic content involving racism, strong disturbing images, and racial slurs. It's 2 hours and 10 minutes. IMDb is a 7.6 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, critics 98%, audience 96%. So all groups are really enjoying this movie. And the synopsis, as we mentioned, in 1955, after Emmett Till is murdered in a brutal lynching, his mother vows to expose the racism behind the attack while working to have those involved brought to justice. We should say that Danielle Deadwyler plays the role of Mammy Till. Her name's going to come up in some of these critics' reviews. She gives an amazing performance. We'll talk more about that in our likes. But first, critics' review is from Kay Austin Collins of Rolling Stone, who says, an impassioned melodrama on the surface, unafraid of facing tragedy head-on and allowing ample space for grief, anger, and fear, but which is also a wise movie about the complicated political world Mammy Till finds herself in. And obviously, too, I think the big thing for me with this movie is, like, this happened in 1955. Like, I don't know how old your parents are, Katie, but that's only 5 years removed from my parents being alive. So that's only one.
Mine were alive.
It's only one generation before me that this happened. So it's not like this is a something that happened back in 1906 or something. It was in 1955 mm-mm. when it occurred. So not really that long ago in history.
No, it's funny you mentioned that, though, because I thought about that while I was watching it, because my parents were babies. I mean, they weren't, they wouldn't have comprehended the news. But yeah, because I was like, oh, I should ask them about this. And then I realized it was 55 and I was like, well, they're not going to know. But yeah, it's fascinating. And you're right. That's just one generation prior. Mm-hmm. So those people, a lot of people, including a lot of the people that the movie's about, some of them are still alive.
Yeah. Yep. So next up is Soren Anderson of the Seattle Times, who says it's but one aspect of Deadwyler's performance, which is such that powerful is an insufficient term to describe it. I don't really know how you explain her performance in this movie, but it's she's doing a lot of different things very well. And then finally, we have Randy Myers of the San Jose Mercury News, who says a film that offers a stinging historical reminder of America's history of racial injustice at a time where some are seeking to prevent that history from being taught. Obviously, with CRT and everything that is being a big discussion with schools and everything right now, and we have the midterms. Well, by the time you hear this, midterm elections will have happened, but lots of those positions are available in the midterm elections for school boards and things like that. So this is a big topic currently right now that some schools are teaching and some schools are not, just based on their curriculum, what they've decided to do for that. So this movie is directed by Chinoni Chukwu. And she is a writer, producer, and director from Nigeria. So far, she has 8 directing credits, including Clemency, Alaska Land, and several shorts. She came to Dayton in 2015, spoke at TEDx in Dayton. Katie did not live in Dayton yet at that time, but
no.
You have both been in the same city, and no upcoming projects listed yet. This is really her first big, big movie that she has directed. I also saw an interesting... It was before another movie that I went and saw. I forget what it was, but it was like there was a featurette playing for this movie while I was sitting there in the theater. And I think they were talking to her, and she said they made the choice in this movie to not show on screen any violence against Black people, which I thought was a very interesting decision. And when you watch the movie, that's 100% true. There is obviously violence against Black people that happens in this movie, but there's nothing shown on screen. It's either off screen or you hear sounds of it happening or something like that. So she said, I think it was her that was talking in this. She said they made that choice because Black people have already suffered enough. They didn't need to relive that in a theatrical film. So I just thought that was a very interesting decision by her. And I wanted to bring that up because I thought that was very interesting in that featurette when they were talking to her about the movie, that she said that was a conscious choice that they made throughout the film, was to not show any violence against Black people on screen. So,
Jared, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I noticed they don't show, if anybody's wondering, they don't show the murder being committed. But I don't think they needed to. There was enough graphic content in this film that you don't need that. But I think that's a great choice. I'm really glad you brought it up, though, because it wouldn't have even occurred to me that they didn't do that or why she chose not to do that. But I agree with her choice wholeheartedly. And I don't think you needed to see how he died. Some people might already know before they go see this film, too. And you can look it up. There's plenty of content on the internet, like on reputable websites and things that say all the things they did to him. But you see enough with his body and everything that you know what happened. You have a clear understanding of the violence that was inflicted upon him. But wow, thank you for sharing that, Jared. That's great. And I agree with her. I fully support that choice.
Yeah. One of the more interesting things I've seen in the movie pre-show, because a lot of times it's just like I'm on my phone waiting for the previews to start. But yeah, this popped up, and for some reason I was like actually watching it instead of being on my phone, and I heard her say that. So I wanted to bring that up, and we'll take a quick break here on the show. We'll come back. We'll talk about the cast and fact versus fiction and our likes and dislikes for Till. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about Till, released just a couple weeks ago. And I forgot to do the box office earlier as well while I was doing IMDb Rotten Tomatoes scores. I wanted to mention the box office for this movie is at $4.7 million right now as of November 5th, which is when we're recording this. Again, it just got released into more theaters, and I think it's getting great word of mouth. So the box office total has increased, which is great, because I think more and more people probably needed to see this movie, and it's a very important story that's being told with this film. So the woman who plays the lead role of Mammy Till Mobley is Danielle Deadwyler.
Just get ready to hear that name a lot in award season. I was like, give her the Oscar now. Just give it to her. No one else needs to campaign for this. Done. Like, I really thought that actually the movie wasn't even over. And I was like, well, I guess we know best actress this year.
Yeah. Yep.
But she is so good. Okay. I'm getting ahead of myself. But Danielle Deadwyler, yes, she plays Mamie Till Mobley. She is Emmett Till's mother in the movie. She is an actress and producer from Atlanta. She is best known for The Harder They Fall, The Devil to Pay, Gifted, which I love that movie and I've talked about it, so I wanted to mention it. And then also the TV miniseries Watchmen, Station 11, and From Scratch, which is now on Netflix if you want to watch that. She has a ton of upcoming projects. I couldn't list them all, but some of them include Bygone Billy, Carry On, and It's Time. So you're going to see her a lot, and I think she has a very good chance of at least being nominated, if not winning an Oscar this year.
I would agree. So,
you heard it here first, November 5th. Also, sidebar, I always love November 5th because it's Guy Fawkes Day. And I always remember the 5th of November. If anybody is a V for Vendetta fan.
There you go.
Anyway, try to blow up Parliament. Anyway, okay. Next up, but back to the serious topic at hand. Next up, we have Jalen Hall. He plays Emmett Till. He is 14. He is also from Atlanta. He starred in Space Jam A New Legacy. I did not figure that out, Jared, until I was reading his credits on IMDb. He was also in The House with a Clock in Its Walls and John Henry. Next up, you can see him in the TV series The Crossover, which is currently filming.
Very nice.
And lastly, just get the crush alert button ready, Jared. Sean Patrick Thomas. Thank you. Sean Patrick Thomas plays Gene Mobley. I did not put it together for a minute when I was watching the film on who this was. And then I was like, OMG, that is Sean from Save the Last Dance. So he is currently 51. I don't even know how that's possible. And he looks like he's 30. But dang, beautiful, beautiful man. Both his parents are from Guyana. I found that to be very interesting. He is known, like I said, for Save the Last Dance, also Barbershop, and the TV series Reasonable Doubt. Next up, you can see him in the TV movie Selection and the TV series Gen V. And then this movie has an all-star cast. I knew most of these actors from other things as well. But this movie is also starring Whoopi Goldberg, Haley Bennett, Frankie Faison, Kevin Carroll, and John Douglas Thompson, to name a few.
And we mentioned Danielle Deadwyler's Oscar predictions. Just wanted to say while you were going through the cast there, I looked up on Variety has her as the third favorite right now between Michelle Yeoh from Everything Everywhere All at Once and Kate Blanchett for Tar, which I have not seen yet. So
I love Kate. I love Kate, but I want Danielle to get it. And I would put Danielle above Michelle.
But most of the sites, the three sites I looked at all had her as a nominee for Best Actress, just to not have her as the favorite to win Best Actress. But that could all change.
I'm so excited. Wow. Cool. Well, good, Jared. Well, we set it on the 5th of November.
We did.
It's recorded.
So now we have some fact versus fiction. This was found on Screen Rant. It's an article called The True Story of Till Explained and What the Movie Leaves Out by Clotil Chinichi. There's a couple of things. Most of the stuff in the movie is true. So that's a good thing to have. And the first fact that was true is that Emmett Till did have a stutter after contracting polio at the age of 6.
Yes. So I don't know how much that affected his speech. Like, it didn't go into detail, but I thought that was interesting because polio was prevalent then and also the lingering effects of it. So the one thing I could find that was kind of false/left out, but I think is important to know, Emmett's dad wasn't in his life very long. They kind of explain that in the movie, but the story behind it is kind of wild. Lewis, his father, and Mamie separated in 1942. He cheated on her, probably with multiple people, but we know for sure there was one. She filed a restraining order against him. I do think there was some physical altercations. He did die in World War II, which they mention in the film. That's what they got right. But it was because he was executed because he had raped an Italian woman while overseas.
Well, he sounds like great guy.
I know. And I didn't even know that was a thing, like in the 40s and 50s, that they were still executing people for misconduct. Yeah, just wild. So that's sad. I certainly don't want any of that to overshadow this entire story, but I do think that's really interesting. And then she mentions once in the movie that she'd been married twice. That was true. So she had been married to him. She was with him, and then she was with another gentleman before she married Gene Mobley.
Another true fact is that Emmett's only fault seemed to have been nothing more than talking to a white woman and whistling at her upon leaving the store. You see that in the movie. He goes into the store to basically buy some candy, talks to this woman at the register who is white, and then gives her a compliment and whistles at her on the way out. That's confirmed by a couple different accounts. And his youthful moment broke the unwritten law regarding the interactions between a black man and a white woman in the South during the era of Jim Crow racism. But he did, according to all accounts, nothing more than that. That was what unfortunately got him killed in 1955.
Yes. And I did, I was going to bring this up with Jared anyway about school, like if we were taught this. We were taught this in school, which I'm very proud of, especially having come from Indiana. It's surprising to me that when I was in high school, which would have been over 15 years ago, that they taught this to us. It would have been about 15 years ago, but they did teach us this story. And I didn't remember the whistle. So I specifically wanted to look that up because I thought that was Liberty Hollywood had taken to be dramatic. Cause I thought, like, why would he have done that? And part of me wonders why he did that, but we have to keep in mind he was a teenage boy. I'm positive didn't mean any harm by it, but also we know now that Mrs. Bryant lied about almost everything in the interaction and blew it out of proportion cause she sucks. So the whistle, though, was factual and confirmed by multiple accounts. So just wanted to bring that up. And then another true fact that they got right, which I also learned in school, there really was an open casket funeral and photos taken of Mamie with her son's mutilated body. So the photo and I have a source to direct you to at the end of this, but I think it's important to see the photos. I know graphic violence can be difficult for people, but I do think it's important, especially if you're white and trying to teach your children or other people about racism and this repetitive history and problem we have with it to this day. I think photos like that are kind of crucial. It's kind of that same thing we've talked about where some people, I know Jake Tapper and other people have talked about showing some of the violence from school shootings, like showing shoes with blood on and things like that. It's shocking. But that's also that shock factor seems to weigh people like, you know, leave an impression more. So if you can handle it, I would recommend looking at the photos. But all of that was true. And if you look at the photo, especially with Gene and Mamie with his body, with Emmett's body, it's almost exact how Chukwa, how she directed it and how it looks in the film, is it's identical to the photo.
Also, another true fact is she did testify in the trial. You see that in this movie as well, where she does go on the stand at the trial. That's a very impactful scene, which we'll talk about here in just a few minutes. So that is true. And then she also did become an activist after the trial was over, and to continue to talk about her son being brutally murdered, and tried to give speeches on racial inequality and justice and things of that nature throughout the rest of her adult life.
Yes. And then the last thing is a quote. I wanted this exact quote because everybody is kind of interested in what the results were. And they do cover this in the movie, but if you just want some extra context, this is a quote. Till profoundly captures the injustice of this case. Emmett Till was brutally murdered, and the men responsible suffered absolutely no consequences. What made it worse was that in 1956, both men confessed to the crime in a paid interview with Look magazine, describing how they tortured and murdered the 14-year-old boy. However, due to them being legally protected by the legal defense of double jeopardy, they could not be charged a second time for the crime, as they had already been acquitted. Ultimately, neither Bryant nor Milam served time or received a sentence for Emmett Till's murder, despite the reopening of the case both in 2004 and again in 2017. Similarly, Carolyn Bryant was never charged with providing false testimony, despite her culpability being called into question in the latest reopening of the case. Tragically, young Emmett Till has still not received true justice almost 70 years later.
And then you also found a video on YouTube that is more of a slideshow of photographs from Time magazine that were taken when this occurred. And you wanted to mention that as well.
Yes. And Brian Stevenson, if people remember, we had talked about Just Mercy. He narrates kind of this 8-minute video, or he has a lot to say in it, which I forgot I wanted to read that movie. So I also reserved it at the library for the start of 2023. I'm going to read that. Really excited about it. But anyway, it's Time. Sorry, I'm pulling up the name again. It's called The Body of Emmett Till, 100 Photos, Time, as in Time magazine. It's on YouTube. It's 8 minutes long. You do see the photos. If you can handle that, again, I think it's important that you try. But they talk all about the photos. He talks about Mamie's activism. He kind of like talks about a lot of what the movie covers, but it gave me a lot of extra information as well. So if you can watch that, I strongly recommend it.
So we'll get into our likes now for Till. We've already talked about this a little bit, but Danielle Deadwyler's performance in this is just amazing. She captures playing the role of Mammy Till Mobley so well. At times I thought I was actually watching the real life. I mean, I forgot that she was acting. I mean, that's how good she was doing in this movie. She's just giving an incredible performance in this film.
I don't think I have seen Danielle Deadwyler in anything except Gifted. I would have seen her in that, but it was a small part. She was astounding. I can't remember a time in recent years where a movie was harder to watch than this one, or where someone's performance like just seared my heart. I don't know a better way to say it. I thought she was Mamie. I mean, and also, that video, the Time video, you hear Mamie Till Mobley talk. She talks quite a few. They hear, like, they run a few different, like, clips of her speaking. Anyway, but Danielle Deadwyler, I could say I don't know where she came from, but it's Atlanta and she's been in other things. But she is amazing. And this performance blew my mind. And things like, just as an actor, I currently am in a play. When there is dead time on stage, where you're just standing there and other people are talking. I don't know if this happens to everybody, but I always get self-conscious. What do I do with my hands? Am I shuffling my feet? Am I standing still? And you don't want to distract the audience members by doing too much, but you also want to look like a person. And I thought of that with her performance. There were moments where she has to cry and the camera zooms in on her. And you just felt like, I felt like she was truly Mamie and she was experiencing all of these emotions. I believed every minute of her performance. It was amazing.
Another like for me, and this kind of leads into our next like as well, with the shock value, with the images and language being appropriate. But another like for me is that this movie gives itself time to breathe in very emotional sequences. It does not rush through them. It does not try to get on to the next scene in the movie quickly. There are a couple of scenes in this movie, particularly the one where she sees Emmett's body for the first time and just sees how mutilated it is and how disfigured it is, where she is finally allowed to see him for the first time. And you see that as the viewer. She's touching his body. She's touching his foot. She's crying. She's giving out all this emotion. This is probably a 5-6 minute scene where it is just her in that room. There's really not even any words being spoken. It's just the emotion that obviously a mother would feel when she sees her son's dead body and just how, bad it looks. And I thought that acting in that scene was just incredible. I thought the direction in that scene was fantastic. It basically starts where the sheet is pulled back, and then the camera doesn't show you it right away. It basically kind of goes up over this ledge and then slow zooms into the body. And I feel like the direction, the choice there to kind of slowly let you see the body, just like she is now slowly realizing what happened, for the first time, kind of with the evidence there right in front of her. I thought it was just incredible acting and direction in that particular part of the movie. I also really liked, according with her performance, the scene where she is talking to, so basically Emmett goes to his cousin's house. That's why the whole reason he's down there visiting in the first place. And she talks to one of the family members there, and she realizes that she sees first that there was a gun in the house when they came to basically take Emmett from them. And she addresses that with the family member, in terms of, hey, why didn't you use the gun? Why didn't you use the weapon? I thought that scene was very well, because she's having to relive that moment kind of all over again. And I thought too, when she was on trial, I thought that scene was incredible. Again, another choice to just basically show her on camera talking for 5 minutes while she goes, gives her testimony of what happened. That was another incredible acting sequence as well. And I thought she did a great job too of just showing how grief affects you in different ways. Like, there's a scene in this movie where she's being introduced to somebody and they have a young child, and you see on her face that makes her think of Emmett once again after he's unfortunately passed away. Just a lot of really great directing decisions and acting decisions in this movie, because it never goes away. I mean, this is after the funeral. Obviously, you have that happen, but you see that it's still affecting her day in and day out, even with small little things that are happening in her life.
Yeah, Jared, you pointed out some of the best scenes, I think, in the movie, acting wise, and just letting you sit in that grief with them, especially when she talks to Preacher, the uncle mm-hmm, that yep. was watching, the family member that was supposed to be watching Emmett, because even I, that was hard to watch yep. when the men came, but you're also like, I totally understand as much as I can. What was he supposed to do? He was a black man trying to protect his entire family. They had guns and they were white men. What was he supposed to do? And he also, if he sacrificed himself and he died, then no one would be there to defend them, and they could have done God knows what to the kids and the wife. I mean, it was an impossible choice to make, and he made the best choice that he could at the time. But I can't imagine as a mother how difficult that was to experience. And the scene, I don't remember a movie. I was physically distressed during this whole film. There were moments where I feel like I stopped breathing, or I was breathing so heavily I was a little concerned I was going to distract people. And I cried and cried and cried. But I was glad. I actually went alone, so it was probably better that I was by myself for this one. And I will say, I was also happy to see quite a few white people in the audience at this film. I was very proud of that. And it was a Sunday evening, and I was surprised just by like the turnout on a Sunday night, who's really going to go to the movies. So that was good. You had a beautiful statement, Jared, about like them taking space in this movie and finding those moments, to really let things sink in. And I also think, I did wonder if they were going to show his body and stuff. And I think that was a better being a weird term to use, but a better thing to show than the violence inflicted upon him. So that left a lasting image. And if you think by any means that the movie was like over-exaggerated what his body looked like, that was exactly what his body looked like. Because you do have to keep in mind water and bloating as well, because he was found in the river. Mm-hmm. Just a fantastic job.
Also, another like is that we've already kind of talked about this, but it focuses on Mammy's, what she does after Emmett Till passes away. That's really the second half of the movie. The first half is kind of him, and you see their relationship, and they live in Chicago. And you know, she warns him multiple times about going to Mississippi to see his cousin, saying that it's, hey, it's a different world down there. You're going to have to watch yourself, you know, being, and you see too, just how distraught she is about him being down there. You know, she's wants to go down there as soon as possible to see him or get him back as soon as possible while he is still alive. But then the second half of the movie really switches more to this courtroom drama trial. How do we basically make this not happen again, or try to bring some justice to this moment? So that was good that I thought it definitely showed the aftermath of what happened after he did, unfortunately, you know, get murdered.
Yes. I don't really have anything to add to that. I agree with you. I echo those sentiments. But I think the only other thing I wanted to add that I liked was how true this was to life. How many times do we see a movie that's quote unquote based on true events, and they basically just take the characters' names and that's about it, as far as something being factual? I think this movie really benefited from having a female director and a Black director. Because I think you really got the experience of a mother. I think you got the real experience of the Black community pulling together and how Black people were victimized in the 50s. I mean, still today as well. But they did such a good job of keeping this factual and accurate. And like Jared said, the momentum going, it was a great, great film. Beautifully done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say too, like I don't know how you felt, Katie, but like with Danielle Deadwyler's performance, I found myself like nodding my head multiple times when she's like, we're going to have him in an open casket. I was like, yeah, you should, because that's going to be very impactful. Or like after the trial, when she walks out during the testimony and she's like, they're like, do you want to stay? And she's like, no, I already know who's going to win. Like, mm-hmm. I know the decision. I don't need to. Yeah. Be objected to any more of this. So I thought those were some just great, like, subtle moments in the movie too. So,
well, in this movie, I want to be respectful of everybody's mental health and their opinions and stuff, but I know there are some people who, like, Jared and I wanted to cover this because there's other more uplifting movies we could have covered.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, I know a couple, I won't say names, but I know a couple that are like, that's too much for me, or I don't want to sit through a film that's just going to make me sad. I completely understand that, and I was hesitant to see this, but I would urge you, if you can try, this is such an important film. And I was even thinking the other day, you know, not even a year ago, we were talking about Black Lives Matter. Everybody was talking about these things. And even I have done a poor job. I've kept up some of my reading and education, but not nearly to the extent I was a year ago. And I think we have to keep putting out content like this, because we do need to know these are still issues that we're facing. We need to know about Emmett Till, but this, how many boys has this actually happened to in life? So that's all very important. And the last thing that really stuck with me about this film was that lynching was not a crime. Like, they didn't put that anti-lynching act until March of this year. Please let that sink in. We did not say that was like a crime. You could be committed for it. And there was an anti-lynching act in place until March of 2022. And this happened in 1957.
Yeah.
So 55.
Yeah.
It happened in 55.
Yep. Yeah.
Just please think about that. That's a mess. I'm so glad we have it now written into law, but that's disturbing.
I had two more quick things I want to mention before we move on to dislikes. Yeah. One was, I thought Jalen Hall's performance as Emmett Till was very, we haven't talked about him much. He was very good.
So good.
Especially early,
so good.
Of course, early in the movie before he unfortunately is murdered. He's very exuberant, vibrant. He's just a sunshine on the screen, basically. He's just very fun to watch in his role of Emmett Till. So I thought he did a great job. And I would also say that this is a movie, in terms of a like, that you should go see in theaters. One, because personally, I wanted to do better at the box office than it's doing right now. And two,
yes.
I think when you watch something at home, while this doesn't have any big action sequences or car chases or obviously, you know, special effects, anything like that, I think sometimes when you watch something at home, you don't focus on it as much as when you watch it in a theater. And I think for this movie to just sit in there for 2 hours and this was be the only thing that I was thinking about, I think made it have a greater impact than if I would have watched this like on my couch at home.
Yep.
So
Jared, I'm proud to know you.
Thanks.
That's great idea. Great comments.
So on to dislikes now. We don't have a lot for this movie. Obviously the main dislike is that it's very hard to watch. It's a very emotional movie. Yeah. It's not an easy, you know, popcorn flick at all. You're going to leave with definitely some thoughts, and you're probably going to be thinking about it, you know, after the film is over. Everybody in my theater was pretty, well, except for two people, which is going to be a dislike. I had these two people in my theater that had, I don't know how many freaking snacks, and they would always open them at the worst possible moment. No. So like, while there's, you know, when she's seeing his mutilated body for the first time, here's a freaking candy wrapper that somebody is opening. I mean, just had no like sense of timing on that. And they were also talking to each other the entire movie. Now, I don't know what they were talking about. Maybe they were having conversations about that. Wow, that was very emotional, or wow, that's awful that happened. I don't know. I couldn't hear them, but I could hear them whispering, and that was distracting. Just sit there and watch the movie, open all your snacks up beforehand, or like during the first half of the movie when there's like, you know, some more uplifting things happening. Not like when the, I don't want to hear you open your Twizzlers during the funeral scene of Emmett Till. I'm sorry.
No, but I usually open snacks right when when the preview starts.
Yeah.
So they're open.
Great.
They're just ready to go.
So yeah, it is very hard to watch movie though. An important movie, but not an easy one to watch on screen for sure.
Totally agree with you. And it is graphic, and it is, it's hard. Even I am not immune to hearing like the N word and stuff. That still is very triggering. It's triggering for me as a white person. So I can only fathom what it's like for Black people, or anyone of color. So that's difficult. And this isn't something I would want to watch all the time, but I think it's crucial. And it's definitely one of the best films I've seen this year. I don't even have to think about that. It is so well executed. Great. Great film. Well done.
Also, you mentioned the N-word. I think the first time that we hear it in this movie is later on. Is it in the courtroom? Is that the first time that it's uttered?
I think so. It's by that. Yeah. Man, I just found myself getting so enraged. That larger gentleman. I just got so mad during this film. I was in between bouts of like hyperventilating, sobbing. I was also infuriated.
Yeah. Well, they bring the jury in and it's just a bunch of old white men.
Old, overweight, ugly white men.
And I turned.
It was like there wasn't a thing to like about them.
And I turned to Allison and I said, well, this is going to be a fair trial for sure.
Right. So. Absolutely. Fair.
Mm-hmm. Another dislike is I had a dislike. It's a little. My only real big dislike is that it's a little too long. I really liked everything up until, you know, it was very emotional up until the funeral. And then the second half of the movie kind of transitions to this courtroom drama trial. There's a period in between where the funeral happens and when they start the trial that Mammy's character is basically going down to Mississippi. She's meeting all these big figures, like with the NAACP and other people that are involved. Mm-hmm. And try to bring racial equality. And that's very important. But I just thought the movie lost some of its momentum there. I mean, there's like 15 or 20 minutes where she's just getting introduced to various people, or they're driving her around town and showing her some things that I thought that maybe could have been cut down or shortened a little bit, because I was interested to get to the trial. And I know that doesn't immediately happen after a death. So there was some time that needed to pass there. But there's even a scene where they're like, you should go, you know, on the news and tell your story or do an interview or something. You know, there's a lot of like side stuff that happens before we get to the trial.
Yes, I was grateful for that moment in time because it gave me a chance to kind of like breathe and calm down, because at that point I was fully weeping. But I agree with you. If there was anything we could have taken out of the film, that would have been the kind of like situation, few scenes that I would have taken out. I did think it was incredible that Mamie went to Money, Mississippi. Like, I have no idea how she found the courage to do that. And also that I think that would have been incredibly dangerous as well. Yeah. Also, this movie made me never want to go to Money, Mississippi. Not like it was high on my list. But anyway, I do think that you're right. It felt the slightest bit too long for me. And I think that's what they could have cut.
And then final dislike was there was really no call to action at the end of this. Sometimes they will put in the credits like, if you want to learn more, go here. If you would like to donate,
or sign this petition,
go here. You know, things like
that. Write to your senator.
Yeah. But they obviously have, you know, facts that pop up about the movie at the end, like what happened in real life. But there's nothing at the very end that says, you know, to learn more or to donate or to sign, like you said. So that would have been nice just to maybe have something on the screen at the end that kind of give, if you want to research more about this, a place to do so possibly.
Yes. And I, just because we're wrapping up too, like this is such a convoluted topic. Like all of this leads to so many big like, we haven't even mentioned Medgar Evers was in this movie. Medgar Evers was later assassinated, and he was big in the civil rights movement. There's so many things we could talk about that matter with this film, but, you know, we are trying to keep this somewhat concise, but also it is a podcast. We want to keep it kind of lighthearted, but just this movie overall, I think they did an astounding job. I do wish there was a couple things at the end that could have told me something I could have done, because if I had known this wasn't a problem, like it wasn't like lynching was not eradicated or told to be done by March of 2022, I would have done something prior to that. And I don't think anybody should go after Carolyn Bryant's still alive. I personally think she's garbage, but I don't know her. But I don't want anything bad to happen to her. I don't think violence, you know, begets violence, but wow, just this movie really opened my eyes to a lot of things, but we can only cover so much. But I wish they would have said something at the end about this is what you can do now.
Yeah. I think before we give our scores, I think for Oscar nominations for this one, I could see it getting a Best Picture nomination.
Best Picture.
I think Best Actress is a lock for a nomination.
Actress, done. Yep.
I could also see it getting a hair and makeup nomination as well, because what they did with Emmett Till's, you know, murdered body was just incredible. Yeah. The what they were able to apply in terms of makeup and things like that. So I think that could receive a nomination. Maybe screenplay as well. I'm not sure. I think the director category is stacked this year. While I would like for, you know, Chinonne Chukwu to get a directing nomination, I feel like when you have the likes of Damien Chazelle and Steven Spielberg coming out with a movie later this year, and James Cameron, it's like it's going to be, and Ryan Coogler, it's going to be tough to get into maybe that directing category. So
I want her to get in it. I think there needs to be more people of color. So I'm hoping definitely her, Ryan Coogler. I would like to see more of that. Of course, I love Damien, so I'm going to root for Damien. Let's kick James Cameron out. I'm cool with that. Spielberg, he's got enough Oscars. He doesn't need any more. Get out of there. So we'll see. But I agree with you, Jared. And then what was the other thing you made me think of? I can't remember, but I guess scores I can give. I think you're first.
Okay. I think I'm going to give this movie a 90. It's in my top 10 of the year so far. There have been some movies that I liked better than this, so I can't give it a full, you know, 98, 99, but I think a 90, it's definitely a movie you should watch. It's got great performances and an important story that needs to be told. It's told with a ton of respect to everybody involved. We didn't really talk about that a lot, but it's done in a very good way. It's not an easy movie to watch or direct or act in, but everybody does a fantastic job in this. So a 90, it's in my top 10 right now. Obviously we have a lot still to come out with Oscar season, but right now it would make my top 10 at the end of the year if we were doing our list today.
Totally. I'm very close to you as well. I remember the thing I wanted to say. I didn't want to overshadow the topic of this movie by saying I thought the hair and makeup was fantastic. But by that, I mean like the women and stuff. The costumes were beautiful. Mm-hmm. And also that was another factual thing they did. If you look at pictures of Mamie Till Mobley and Jean Mobley and people, the costumes were almost exact for what they were really wearing. And they were just so beautifully done. And if this wasn't such a depressing topic, I would have talked more about the hats and the makeup and all that. Anyway, I'm going to give this a 93. I am same with you, Jared. I think this movie was nearly perfect. It's not one I'm going to be able to watch over and over, but that doesn't matter. The movie was incredibly well done. It's very important. There's not much that I would change about it. The acting was stellar. And I really appreciate how factual it was. So, so, so much. That is such a credit to Chukwu. And I hope there's a lot of Oscar buzz around this one.
Also, one other thing we didn't mention, but Whoopi Goldberg was great in this movie, too, in her limited screen time. So
she was. Whoopi, like, I feel like currently she kind of freaks me out as a person. Yeah, I never know what she's going to say. I kind of don't agree with her on everything. So she freaks me out in that regard.
Yeah.
Also, I didn't recognize her for a minute.
Me neither.
I don't mean this as a slight. I think I couldn't tell if she'd gained quite a bit of weight or if that was padding. So she just looked almost unrecognizable. But obviously she does have acting chops. We've heard it from Ghost and Color Purple and all that. And she also either produced or executive produced the film. But yeah, she's great. She did do a very good job in this film.
Yeah. Agreed. Yep. And about a role.
Well, high marks from us. And we both of us have this in our top 10 right now on Letterboxd for the year. Please, Danielle Deadweiler, give her the Oscar or give her a nom, but definitely give her the Oscar.
And you can follow the Silver Screen Podcast on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook. You'll be able to find us there. Our Letterboxd profiles are in the show description. So just scroll down. You can click and find our Letterboxd profiles for myself and also Katie. And then on our next episode, reviewing one of the most anticipated movies that's left for the rest of the year, Black Panther Wakanda Forever. Directed by Ryan Coogler.
I'm so excited. So,
looks like it's going to be very good. Another, I would say, like I said on our last episode, or maybe the episode before, I feel like Ryan Coogler has the toughest directing task this year, trying to make a sequel for a movie where your lead star has unfortunately passed away due to cancer. So I feel like that's almost an impossible feat to try and take on. So I'm really interested to see what he's done with this movie. And so that'll be next episode, Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.